brothers, sisters, siblings, welcome to Penn Sunday School, brought to you by Masterclass, and we are broadcasting from Show Creator Studio South here in Las Vegas. And this week, Penn is going to give you all of his NBA picks for the playoffs straight through the finals, or he's going to talk about a ride in the limo. One of those things is true. We're going to find out which one right now. Here he is, preaching the love, Penn Jillette.
Brought to you by who?
Masterclass.
You got that right. Brought to you by Masterclass. Masterclass. We're going to talk more about Masterclass. It's lifetime learning.
Yeah.
Lifelong learning. You should really do that. We all do that. We all love doing that. And right now, you can get 15% off at masterclass.com/pen. That's masterclass.com/pen. We'll talk more about that later. You billboarded that we were going to talk about basketball picks, and we're not. But you also billboarded a limo ride.
Yeah.
That I do want to talk about.
Okay.
Because it's a limo ride that was remarkable.
Okay.
I went to North Carolina.
There. Wow, that took a second, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
I landed in Charlotte.
That's right.
I landed in Charlotte. And I don't know why I said that, but and the job was in Greensboro.
Okay, Greensboro's far away from Charlotte.
Nah, I don't know why a bird attacked me, but about an hour, 20 minutes, hour,
okay.
30 minutes, and
that to me is far away.
Yeah, it's far away, and it was a good job. It was me solo, which is always an advantage. Because I don't have teller,
right.
Which is also an advantage. And I was speaking for 45 minutes to a, like the Better Business Bureau, but better than the Better Business Bureau. It's another.
The quadruple B?
Yeah. It was like 500 people.
Okay.
And always a bad sign, by the way, during the dinner. Mm-hmm. I was the after dinner speaker.
Okay.
During the dinner, a guy said to me that I was sitting with, mm-hmm. the big cheese, because I was at the head table.
Nice.
Said to me, you know, people think that we're from Greensboro and down south, that we're pretty staid and conservative, but I'll tell you that a lot of us are a lot looser and more liberal than you might think.
Then he unbuttoned his shirt and revealed his nipple clamps.
Yeah, no. Once someone says that,
yeah.
You know, these people are more conservative than I could possibly imagine.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one thinks they're uptight about humor. No one thinks they're uptight about sex.
I was told very clearly that I shouldn't say Jesus Christ or God damn.
During your speech.
During my speech. Yeah, not that I would ever in my life. Excuse me.
Do you have an appointment to get that weird shot in your neck, that weird needle?
I already had two of them.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I have a little bit of a congestion, so
okay.
I'm coughing. I think it's kind of from the dust at Tim's.
I think
that kind of got me going.
We also have record crazy. We've broken every record for pollen we can break here in Las Vegas.
Well, I got something going on.
Death Valley is alive, is blooming, as they say.
Death Valley is blooming.
Yeah.
So they were very nice to me.
You were not allowed to say Jesus Christ or goddamn.
I was not. And
was this a standard appearance by you where on the limo over you still didn't know what you were going to talk about until you got there?
Yeah. I was sitting at the I did do something incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I did do something incredible. You know Henry Winkler.
The Fonz.
Yeah. Henry Winkler is known.
Or for anyone younger than me, from Barry.
Yeah. Henry Winkler is known in show business and even outside of show business as the nicest guy in the world.
Right.
You know that. You can't find someone saying something bad about Henry Winkler.
No. In fact, one of the strangest Hollywood things that exists is that there's a tension between Tom Hanks and Henry Winkler.
Really?
Yes. Tom Hanks ended up getting Henry Winkler fired off of Turner and Hooch.
Huh?
Way back in the day. So you have Henry Winkler, supposedly one of the nicest guys to work with in Hollywood.
Right.
Head to toe. Tom Hanks, known as just a first-class guy, mm-hmm. all the way. And those two have tension whenever they see each other.
Oh, that is fabulous. That is fabulous. The two nicest guys
yes.
have something fucked up between them.
Yeah.
That gives hope.
It does.
So, Henry Winkler's known for being no problem on anything.
Yeah.
And I went there And they said, you know, of everybody we've worked with, you are the easiest we've worked with. I mean, Henry Winkler was fantastic, but you are actually less trouble than Henry Winkler.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Did they have like elaborate writers?
I don't know what it was, but Henry Winkler must have said, could I have a glass of water?
So for showbiz, for non-showbiz people, writer is a sheet you send ahead of time to make sure certain things are taken care of for you when you get there. And some people notoriously say, like, I donated my time, but the writer still cost them 10 grand to put together, that kind of a thing.
Well, it's an attachment to the original contract.
There you go.
So I did say, when we were doing the final what do you need thing, they said, and you want a table with a glass of water, where would you like that? And I went, what? Why don't you put it wherever you want? If it's in the wrong place, I'll move it. And they went, oh okay.
They said, although, once again, the partnership you have with Teller.
Yeah.
Teller would know whether you wanted the table and he would want the water.
Teller would not be easier than Henry Winkler. That's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. But it was very fun. I had no idea what I was going to say.
Wait, before we read ahead, in the end, did you end up moving the table or the water at all?
No.
Okay.
And the fire marshal. Now, I was doing the fire reading at the end.
Okay.
Okay. Close of the So the fire marshal came in, right?
Oh.
Now, if you're in Greensboro, North Carolina.
Is that a hotel?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're in Greensboro, North Carolina, and you're a guy with a certain theological bend, you don't get to express it very much.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the fire marshal came over, and fire marshals are usually a little bit reticent, polite, and formal.
Mm-hmm.
This fire marshal came over. In uniform with his badge.
Ooh.
And went, I don't think we have to run through anything with you, Penn, because Jesus will be protecting you. Isn't that right? And if something goes wrong on stage, I don't need a fire extinguisher, because in this town, Jesus Christ will protect us. We've got the Lord Jesus Christ protecting us. We don't need stop, drop, and roll. We don't need CO2, because Jesus Christ will protect us. And I said to him, atheist, right? No, but he went, I'm so pleased to meet you. I'm so pleased to meet you. You're so, it's so great. I said, well, I have to run through the fire for you. He said, well, I know that Jesus Christ is watching over us, so I'm not going to have any problem with it.
Was he for real?
No, no. When you are an atheist.
Oh, in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, and you know there's going to be another atheist.
Yeah.
You want to get every single joke out of your system.
Okay. I was really just not sure which way this is going. Okay.
Oh, no, no. It was 100%. He was atheist.
He was smiling and winking.
Smiling and winking
to
the point that he almost gave his forehead a concussion. That's how much he was winking. And it was really great. And then he was backstage going, we don't need a fire extinguisher, right? Because we got Jesus Christ. He just kept saying stuff like that. God will protect us. He said, you know, a lot of times when the building's on fire, I just drop to my knees and pray. He was just a great guy.
He was a great guy and also venting, I believe.
He was venting. He was venting so heavily. But
like when people thank Jesus in the emergency room after a doctor did their job.
Yeah. Right?
And the doctor has to go like, sure, thank Jesus.
Yeah, he was just having a...
He keeps people safe.
Yeah.
And they thank the Lord.
Yeah. So he was having fun and he was glad to meet me. And his superior.
And proud of his bit.
Yeah, very proud.
Very proud.
And it was also funny.
Yeah.
It had me laughing because he would not stop.
I bet that morning at breakfast, he's like, I'm going to do the Lord Jesus bit with Penn. Mm-hmm. And she's like, can you please not? Can you just be nice to him? He's visiting our town. Can you... Please don't think you're funnier than the professional comedian. Please,
and when he got back, he told his wife, and he was laughing.
He was laughing the whole
laughing,
time.
And he would not be lying.
He wanted me to keep going. I did it before. I did it in the back room, too. He just wanted me to keep going. He just loved it.
He was right. There was nothing. You could just tell his, I'll say this to his wife now, if he listens, you were wrong. It was the right bit to do for Ben. Ben liked it. And his superior came over, and I said, "I'll be doing my salute to firefighters and how hard they work, and then I'll end with the fire reading, and then my big napalm finish." everybody was very, very nice, and I went out there and did. They were a little quiet, but you never know how you do until they come back and offer you another job.
Right,
which is actually one metric.
Yeah.
Besides applause, it's another metric.
And it's Glenn's favorite metric.
Yeah.
It's Glenn's preferred metric.
Preferred metric.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is all leading up to the limo ride. Oh. I should also say we have a fooler in the hizzy.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, Moxie.
Moxie.
Oh, I blew the intro.
It's okay.
I didn't know you were going to build it up more.
You just got very good dough.
I did.
Very good dough on me.
I did.
But Mox is here. Just my driver. My driver.
How dare you?
You said, I'll drive you over is what you said. You didn't say I'm going to go on your show.
No, I
That was not
I never
billboarded.
Said that. I never said that.
Right.
I should have the Penn and Teller, I fooled Penn and Teller trophy in the back of my car at all times.
So I want to tell this story because I think I'm, as Matt King would say, I'm going to blow your funky mind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time to drive to Greensboro from Charlotte. Okay.
Okay.
Now I was in a really nice hotel in Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
and then I had to drive to Greensboro, do the show in a hotel.
Yeah.
And then drive back to Charlotte. At Charlotte, I had a hotel room, too. It was a three-room suite, gigantic. I was in it for 20 minutes. and I said to Glenn, and the person that booked us said, I guess the hotel here in Greensboro was not good enough for you. And I looked over at Glenn and said, what the fuck? What are you talking about? And Glenn went, airports in Charlotte. We have to drive from Charlotte to Greensboro and back to Charlotte. Anyway, so we decided to do it in the afternoon instead of the night when we flew in. It was not because it's a better hotel. I went, oh. He said, but it's a better hotel. Okay, so we...
But someone else called you out on it?
Well, someone else was just saying.
Yeah.
She was saying, we have you in a nicer hotel in Charlotte.
I interpreted
that as the hotel isn't nice enough in Greensboro. And just for the record, Greensboro has a nice enough hotel for Penn Jillette.
It does.
As a matter of fact, Fresno has a nice enough hotel for Penn Jillette.
Henry Winkler wrote a 1-star Yelp review of the hotel.
When I was traveling with Teller, we stayed in Motel 6s, two of us in one row.
Oh, yeah.
And we were okay.
Yeah.
We were okay. Although being in a room with Teller is no longer acceptable. That's now in my rider.
When was the last time you and Teller shared a hotel room?
Jesus, it would have been...
BC.
It would have been maybe 81.
I was going to say 80s. 80s would be the decade.
But probably more like 73. 75 maybe, around there.
Do you think one time was just when you suggested, why don't we just get two rooms? And then never again. Then you never, the conversation never
Well,
went
we
back.
Used to when we were young and frisky.
Yeah.
There was time spent walking around the parking lot while the other one used the room.
right.
Walking around the parking lot in Texas. This is before cell phones, right?
Yeah.
So it was really like however time it was. I'm walking around the parking lot.
It's the origin story of Penn Jillette's obsession with squirrels and birds.
I do like squirrels and birds.
He was like, no phone? It's the 80s. We'll watch the birds.
So... Glenn and I came out, mm-hmm. and there was, Cadillac Escalade, a huge, huge car.
Yeah.
And I get in where I always get in, sitting behind the passenger seat, mm-hmm. which is moved up all the way.
Right, for your giant legs.
Glenn gets in, sitting behind the driver.
Mm-hmm.
The driver is a slender, African-American man, mm-hmm. probably about 30.
Okay.
Maybe late 20s. Every detail of this is important.
Okay.
He starts driving. Driving fairly fast. I'm talking to Glenn, and I have my whole body turned. And I, you know, I don't take in a lot when I'm paying attention.
Right.
I don't know what the world is around me. Mm-hmm. So I'm watching Glenn, and we're talking, we're complaining about Teller. And we're talking rather intently about the new suits and about some other changes.
Mm-hmm.
And
who makes your suits?
Is a Donald, I forget his last name.
Bold great, of you to assume he would know that.
A great costume designer. I love Donald.
People ask me, and I never remember to ask you.
I love Donald.
Okay.
He is a costume designer who's won many Tonys.
Okay. He's out of New York.
Yeah. A Broadway costume designer. Mm-hmm. And he said, I loved when he said, oh, here's all you need to know about costume designing. You spend your entire budget on the leading lady in the first act. Then whatever you have left over, you spend on the leading lady in the second act. Then whatever you have left over, you pay for the other lead woman in the first act. Then whatever's left over, you pay in the second act. And then you pay whatever's left over in the first act for the leading man.
Yeah.
And whatever's left over for the leading man, the second act. He said, then you pay for the chorus, whatever's left over, then the chorus, whatever's left over. And then he says, for the chorus men, you spend whatever's left over the first act. But he said, really, your entire budget.
It's just the leading lady.
Just the leading lady. Yeah. And I also said to him that he said, we went to a suit maker, which is what the answer you really want.
Yeah.
And he had like four or five. We use, by the way, mm-hmm. for the Penn and Teller suits, we got new suits coming out. The Penn and Teller suits, we use 120 yards of fabric.
Whoa. Because the secret is you guys make multiple suits.
Yeah. And so we had swatches of four different kinds of fabric.
Ooh.
And Teller, Glenn, and Donald were hovering around talking about the suits. And I was sitting in the corner reading.
Looking for squirrels.
And Donald came over and said, do you have any opinion on the suits, Ben? First of all, I love Donald. I have kind of a crush on Donald. Uh-huh. I just love him. And I said, I don't care. And he said, if you had any choice of suits, what would you like? I said, I would like to dress like Sun Ra. And he said, Sun Ra? And I said, yes, Afrofuturistic. I said, but Glenn won't let me. He said, it's cultural appropriation, and we would get canceled. And he said, what does he wear? I said, I would like to wear dashikis all the time. I said, I like dashikis, and I feel in my soul that I am an Afrofuturist. I said, I feel close to the African culture, and especially the futurist African culture. And he said, I'm not sure I know that kind of wardrobe. I said, Black Panther. And he said, oh, Black Panther. I said, yes. And he said, of course, it was his friend that won the Academy Award for designing. And I said to him, do you remember during her speech she thanked Sun Ra, which she did.
Yeah.
And I showed him some pictures of Sun Ra, and he said, oh, that's gorgeous. That's really gorgeous. And then Glenn came over and said, Donald, he will not convince you that Penn and Teller are going to wear Afrofuturist. Let's go back over to this. And we went back to suits.
Now, you moved from you had signature pinstripes for a while, and you moved to like a window pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Are you staying with windows?
We might be going with windows, but with red.
Ooh.
And then I said, if I can't have Afrofuturist, I would love nudie suits. And he said, oh, I have a couple nudie suits right here. And he pulled out some suits he just designed for a Broadway show.
Yeah.
That have nudie suits, for those who don't know, are the fancy country western suits.
Longtime listeners can take a drink because you thought the story was going towards nudie suits.
I would like to be wearing a nudie suit.
Yeah.
With, you know, fans of cards.
Yeah, yeah.
All over it. Oh, it'd be so nice. Or Afrofuturist.
Yeah, yeah. But he pulled out nudie suits?
He had a nudie suit, not for us.
Yeah.
But he had nudie suits for someone else he'd just done, some country theme show they're doing.
And there was a red laser dot on his neck from Glenn.
Yeah.
Ready to trank dart him.
So we're talking about this. We're talking about this. And this will pay off. We're in the back, and all my attention is there. And Glenn makes this weird face. And I go, what's up with you? And Glenn says, and points to my phone. And I pick it up, and it says, the driver is texting.
Oh.
Now we're going 85 right. in the fast lane.
Yeah.
And the limo driver is texting.
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes his phone, and he puts it in a phone holder, and I say, he stopped texting. And Glenn writes back, good. And then I watch the driver, because now my attention is on him,
mm-hmm.
and he takes out earbuds, uh-huh. wired earbuds,
uh-huh.
and he puts them in. When driving, not the best idea.
I believe technically illegal.
Yeah. And then he starts fiddling with his phone. And I can see when I lean over.
Dude, I forgot if this podcast is Spotify exclusive or whether I can just get it on my regular app. Yeah. Searching around.
No. You're not even close.
Oh, no.
You're not even close.
Is it Candy Crush?
Not even close.
I'm not going to do this. I'm not even going to guess.
Oh, go ahead. Try.
Really?
Yeah.
He brought up either like Netflix or Hulu or something like that on his phone.
Not even close.
Okay.
Not even close.
Okay.
You're going to think you're dead right.
Yeah.
You're going to think you're dead right.
Yeah.
Because there appears a movie on there that he's listening to and watching while he's driving.
No.
And I write to Glenn, he's watching a movie. He's watching a movie while driving.
Right.
Terrible.
Yeah.
With earbuds.
With earbuds. Watching a movie while driving.
No, he took out a Jiffy Pop and a lighter.
Oh, it's going so much further than you possibly think it could go.
Buckle up, Matt. Literally.
Buckle up.
Really. Literally. Yeah.
Glenn writes back, he's not watching a movie. Glenn has leaned over all the way to the left so Glenn can now see the screen on his phone. And Glenn writes, he's watching Al-Qaeda training videos.
Stop it. He is not.
And I go, what? I look up, and there are people in combat gear with head wraps and rifles.
Oh, my God.
And it is not a scene out of a Sylvester Stallone movie.
Okay.
It's a little bit grainy.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in his Middle Eastern gear holding the Russian rifle is looking directly into camera and laying stuff out.
This feels like a Kimmel prank. This feels...
Mm. It does. So now, if he was watching Finding Nemo...
Right.
We could say to him, sir...
Hey.
We prefer you not be watching Finding Nemo while you're driving.
You don't mind keeping your eyes on the road. We'd appreciate it.
Yeah. That option has been taken away from us.
Now it's, can I pour you some tea? Can I get you anything? Are you hungry? I have a granola bar.
Do you want Bluetooth earbuds?
Wires to cumbersome?
Is there anything the white Satan can do for you? So now we're going 85 down the road, and three people are watching Al-Qaeda. Now, I don't know that it was Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Right? There was the writing on the screen was Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it was saying.
Yeah.
It might have been saying, you know, here's how you scallop French fries.
Love thy neighbor.
It could have been saying any of that.
But in place of these potatoes, we have a Kalashnikov rifle. So just imagine these are potatoes, freshly cut potatoes, and the recipe will proceed.
And it went on in the same shot for the full hour.
Yikes!
Of the trip, of the person addressing the camera. And he was driving 85, and if anybody was ahead of him, he just laid on the horn and held it until they pulled over.
That's what the video told him to do. He was doing a test run.
I've told this story to two or three people, and I love it because the punchline is before my punchline. They go, "He was watching a movie? I can't believe that." And you go,
I wish he was watching a movie.
Finding Nemo, I would have embraced.
Ripley on Netflix. I mean, there's so many just staircases.
You know, I have some advice for you, Dad.
What's that?
All of this could have been avoided if you brought your driver.
Or switched hotels.
We honestly don't know.
Right.
If we are going to go to the hotel or into the hotel with a car full of C4. Right? That's now a possibility.
I mean, if you just even miss the exit and you watch the hotel pass on your left, you got to think, we're going to some cave.
Going
to some industrial
garage.
Going up the
driveway to the hotel.
Right.
Right? That could just keep going into the hotel lobby where the button is pushed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
85.
I mean, that alone, I mean, that hiring a driver that would rail on the horn would drive me bananas.
Uh-huh.
That would, then.
Well, he did take his hand off the horn occasionally.
How often is occasionally?
Every time there was a car in the lane ahead of us, he honked until they got out of the lane.
And worse, it worked. So we're encouraging that behavior moving forward. Now we just can all behave like that when we're in the driver's lane.
Now, he's probably thinking, well, yes, I had my videos up, but no one complained. Correct. So we got in, and the...
this is why, by the way, every master class has audio mode. We should stress that. You don't have to watch the video when taking a master class in your car.
So we get into the hotel. We face Mecca and kiss the ground.
I was going to say, you cry. You and Glenn both get into the shower and just weep.
We get out. We thanked him. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for the ride.
Did you tip him?
We don't have anything to do with that. It's paid for by the company.
Oh, okay.
And we walked in.
Did you call a hotline?
Right. And we walked in, and the woman who was there, who's in charge of our happiness, in charge of keeping us as happy as Henry Winkler.
Yeah.
She said, how was your ride in? And when we got out of eyeshot of the driver, I said to Glenn, you going to rat him out? And Glenn said, no. And I said, okay. She said, no, rat him out. What? And Glenn said, we're here fine. We're here a little early. It was fine. He drove very fast. We're good. We're here. And she said, what was it? And Glenn said, nothing. I have one question. Is that our driver going back? And she said, yes. And Glenn said, no, it isn't. And she said, oh, you? He said, no, we will not have that driver going back. And she said, what was the problem? And he said, we don't need to talk about it. That driver will not drive us back. Which is very unusual for Glenn to say.
Yeah.
And also, you would have thought would have crossed Henry Winkler right there.
Henry was fine with his driver.
Henry did come in a bit militant.
He did kick the AC out of the window in his hotel room. In the parking lot.
She said, what happened? And I said, he appeared to be, we're not sure, I couldn't tell. He had earbuds in and appeared to be watching while he was driving Al-Qaeda training videos. And then time froze.
That poor woman.
And she just froze.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to break the tension, so I said, but it's okay, I'm not Jewish. And she said, I am. And I said, it was just a joke. It was just a joke. And Glenn said, I want to just say that Penn has matured somewhat. He did not ask me loudly in the backseat to tell him about my bar mitzvah. He said, Penn 10 years ago would have done that.
This is why we can't have nice things.
And I said, now I have children. And he said,
no, that doesn't stop you. Don't lie. That does not stop you.
And so she said, oh, he will not be driving you back. And Glenn said, correct.
What she was thinking was, we do have a 3-strike policy at this company. This is the second time we've warned about watching Al-Qaeda videos while driving our clients.
She said, I'm out of Michigan, and the person did, I'm just here to facilitate, and the person did logistics. I will tell them we're not using that driver going back. And she then said, like a half hour later, they don't have another driver available.
Mm.
So I'm getting you an Uber. Mm-hmm. And she said, I'm very, very sorry about this.
But I did build you this bike.
And Glenn said, no problem. We're happy. We're happy with an Uber.
Oh, hitchhiking? No problem. Yeah. Well, we'll just hit the road. I got great thumbs. I have gorgeously big thumbs. Yep. No problem.
No problem at all.
Yeah.
We'll do great. she said, we did, the logistics person did give a...
just a warning.
A strongly worded explanation of why we didn't want that driver going back. And we got into the car to go home, mm-hmm. into the Uber.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was driving, the woman who was our driver was FaceTiming her children.
Stop it.
Yeah, true. While she was driving. And Glenn and I were like, ah.
What a relief.
They're very conservative.
Until the kids were like, Mommy, here's the blueprint for the Empire State Building.
That is, I believe, the winner of all limo driver stories.
That, yeah. I don't have a better one. I don't take that many limos.
I'm surprised you're not, like, interviewing with the limo company and going, I have a great idea for a company.
I mean, if we really want to seriously prank you, that's what we would do. You know, like put hidden cameras in the car and turn your driver into an Al-Qaeda trainee.
Yeah, but I mean, nothing happened.
Right.
I mean, it would not have been a good prank because Glenn and I just sat there well-behaved.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like I guess if you were doing a prank, you would have said, do you mind if I pull over to this fertilizer store and load some stuff in the back of the car?
Right. Yeah.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
And then you just see us running away.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
You know what you should have done? You should have gone, I believe in the power of Jesus Christ to get me through this.
It was something.
Should have got some Chick Track comics, passed them forward.
It'd be Chick Tracks. Yeah. Animal Chick Track.
Stop dropping Jesus Christ.
Here's how Jesus can help you.
That's frightening.
Yeah, we don't know. It could have been. I mean, I really mean, there are probably people who are hearing this who are saying that my reaction is 100% racist, which I suppose it is.
No,
we saw
not 100%.
We saw people.
Because if he was watching Nemo, you'd still be in the right.
In battle dress that appeared to me to be battle dress.
Yeah.
I saw what I thought was guns. Mm-hmm. I'm watching a small screen.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? 15 feet away, you know?
No.
10 feet away?
Yeah.
I'm watching that. I don't know what I'm seeing. And of course, I could have been thinking, because of how he looked in his age, that's what I was watching. And it could have been totally innocent. And when I even say Al-Qaeda, I'm obviously showing an ignorance that he could have been watching thousands of things that would look that way to me.
There's so many extremist hate groups out there.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Yes, but also there are...
Golan Globus Productions.
Yeah. He could have been, he could have been easily watching pro-Israel something. He could have been.
But you being racist doesn't excuse him watching videos while driving.
Well, exactly.
Yeah, the driver should keep racist
you
safe.
You can still be racist, but.
This is America.
So, how's them apples?
That beats all my Uber stories for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the truth of it is, it was no kidding.
Yeah.
It was relief when she was FaceTiming her children and telling them to go to bed.
Yeah.
It was absolutely relief. Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good. She has something to live for. let's crazy. Talk. Let's talk for a moment about MasterClass.
Yes.
Shall we? We've said all this stuff a zillion times.
Yeah.
But they have the best instructors. They have the best in the world at MasterClass. As a matter of fact, for the Magic MasterClass, mm-hmm. Do you know who they have?
I believe they have Penn and Teller.
They do. I missed a MasterClass. Oh, that's now there's two. Lifetime learning, lifelong learning is so, so important. It is better than entertainment. You always feel better.
Oh, for sure.
Now, you just watched the Amy Poehler
one. Amy Poehler's, that's what I say. Is that,
on improv. Now, you know
yeah.
A lot about improv.
I do. I do.
And you watch Amy Poehler talk about it.
Yeah, and then watching it, I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, I think anybody, it doesn't matter what your expertise is or your background is or even what your ambitions are, I think you become a better talker, a better listener. I think improv and someone as smart as Amy talking about what happens about taking up space, entering a room, you know, what it means to have one foot in, one foot out, like versus being committed and how your team or people around you, your friends will react to you being fully committed. Like, I believe you'll get something out of it that'll make you a better person just for watching Amy Poehler.
But so we've talked about a lot
yeah.
about, you know, watching Noam Chomsky or yeah. watching Frank Gehry.
Yeah.
And when you're not going into a field
yeah.
and yet you're studying with something that is a field you're not going to go into.
Yeah.
I just said the same thing three times.
Yeah. But I said yes to them all.
But this is the first time that you are watching something that you are a bona fide expert in.
Yeah.
So that's a different experience.
That is a different experience.
Different
for sure.
experience.
Yeah.
Because the other ones you've watched was something you were watching as, oh, I'll learn from this person about this.
Yeah.
What was the difference in watching something you were an expert on?
Oh, back in the day, I was a student of her theater. Right? Uh-huh. And she, in fact, was a teacher of mine very early on in my career. Mm-hmm. At one point, that school really decided to define one aspect of improv learning called finding the game of a scene. Uh-huh. And it's my least favorite part of her masterclass because it was something I disagreed with then and I still disagree with now the way they teach it.
What'd you disagree with?
So they overdefine and overanalyze the idea of like basically when they describe the game of a scene, you can easily mistake it for the premise of the scene. They'll just simply be like, the game is that, you know, she's bright-eyed and trying to get an idea past Ron Swanson. And Ron wants to get in her way. Ron's a stick in the mud, right? Uh-huh. Well, that's the premise. When you do improv, you don't go into that with that idea. That's not your idea to create.
Mm-hmm.
You have to discover something in it. And so what I hate about the then and how Amy describes it in the masterclass there is that like it'll be so clearly as a written dynamic. Whereas uh-huh. it's really, when you quote unquote find a game doing improv, I find it to be almost like a jazz-like groove description, almost like finding the pocket,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's something you would do in the present. That's something you would feel, mm-hmm. not analyze.
So you there's a level of abstraction added to the improv that you disagree with.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So my point on this is that when you're even studying something that you're deeply into,
yeah.
there's more to think about and more to learn about.
Right. And also, I'm about to teach, actually. I'm about to go to New York and teach a workshop. And mm-hmm. so actually watching Amy's thing has already sharpened some of the things I'm mm-hmm. going to focus on heading into my workshop. Mm-hmm. So it is actually legitimately helping me in my real world.
Do you have a plan for
map.
That workshop? What do you plan to teach?
I plan to teach a bull matador scene technique. It's my signature improv technique.
Gotcha.
There are 11 categories. There are 180 plus mm-hmm. instructors. It's available on every platform,
yeah.
everywhere you want. You can listen to just audio.
I switch if, all the time instance, from my laptop to my phone.
You happen. If, for instance, you happen to be driving somewhere in the fast lane going 85, you could just listen to the audio.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to watch the video
with as well. Bluetooth earbuds.
With Bluetooth earbuds.
Yeah. And I just want to say also, just to shout out Amy's thing, I love her masterclass tremendously. And also, she's a fascinating person, and they secretly sneak in kind of a biography amongst her thing, amongst her masterclass. You know, she was hired to be a SNL cast member, and 2 weeks later, 9/11 happened.
Oof.
Hmm.
So imagine getting your big break in comedy, and then an event happens where you wonder where...
It's so much funnier than anything you could ever do. Is that your point?
Thank you for finishing that sentence for me. Wondering whether you were allowed to be funny ever again.
Uh-huh.
That's how it felt.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's your big break and you're in that institution and suddenly you're not allowed, you don't know whether you can be funny ever again. That's crazy.
That is.
Yeah.
That is. But Masterclass is available, and to our listeners, you can get 15%. Once, I should also say this, once you're a member, you get all of them.
Yeah.
So we're not telling you to go listen to Frank Gehry or Steve Martin or Ron Howard and buy one of those or Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
We're telling you that once you're a member, you just get it all. You get it all, and you have all that learning and all that laid out for
you. But you should also go Masterclass. Tell them to watch Penn and Teller.
What's that?
You should also go tell them to watch Penn and Teller.
Yeah, you should watch Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. But you can now get 15% off at masterclass.com/pen. That's masterclass.com/pen. Yeah, it's a good deal, and you should be doing it. Make you a better person. I realized something.
Masterclass is not available on Stone Tablet.
I should tell you that I realized something the other day about sumo oranges.
Oh, I was wondering whether you were going to get to this on the podcast.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Not at all.
Okay. I realized as I was having a sumo orange, you know, I've lost 10 pounds. And I've lost 10 pounds. I'm going to lose more with a lot of fruit.
Okay.
And a lot of just really smart eating, like I'm always supposed to be.
Yeah.
And no ultra-processed food, you know, no potato chips, peanut butter, that kind of stuff. I have to think of myself not as a vegan, but as a plant-based, no ultra-processed food. Yeah. If I do that, I do much better.
You've got to be even snottier.
So I was yeah, exactly. I want to try to beat the CrossFit people for being obnoxious and insufferable. But I was realizing that sumo oranges, right?
I don't know what a sumo orange is.
Okay, then. Sumo oranges are the oranges that are really fat and a little bit crinkled.
Okay.
And they have the big nipple on the top.
Okay.
And when you open them, they just go...
Yes.
The whole skin... And the orange is just right there. And there is no hassle with the orange whatsoever.
Not a lot of rind in the fingernails or anything.
None of that. It just goes...
I have a quick off-topic question, kind of. How recent ago was this story about your sumo oranges?
I've been having sumo oranges all week.
What about this week, though?
I've had a sumo orange this week.
They weren't sumo oranges.
Oh, what were they?
Because I bought the wrong ones.
Okay.
So whatever your realization about sumo oranges,
I saw them.
Boom! Gotcha, Ben. We tried to prank you with the Uber driver. That didn't work. But we got you with the oranges.
There's also a thing called ugly fruit,
uh-huh.
which is actually a step up from sumo.
Okay.
Right? You just touch them and they just open up.
Mm.
And there's like really a half inch between the orange and the rind. It just goes right off.
I heard with the sumo oranges, they take two oranges and they roll them towards each other. And the one that knocks the one away, that's the one
out
they
of
put
the circle.
In the, that's the
and
one.
And they first, they pick up salt and throw it in the air.
Yeah.
And they're real fat and they have the top knot, which they do have, that big nipple on the top. And I got to tell you, people who try to breed oranges, notice the preposition, not breed with oranges. That's a whole different kind of person. The people who want to breed oranges.
Yeah.
I'm so tired, Dad.
Everyone knows it's a grapefruit for that.
The idea of making an orange.
Yeah.
That making a fruit where the container grows around the fruit and is easier to open than plastic.
Right.
Is just genius.
And yet you're still an atheist, Penn.
Yes, exactly.
And yet you're still an atheist.
Yeah. Remember that there was that thing about the banana, right?
Yeah.
Who was that? That fucking idiot, Scott something.
Kurt Cameron.
Kurt Cameron. That's the same name as Kurt Scott of the same name.
Scott Scotterson.
Scott Scotterson. He talked about how the banana was designed perfectly by God.
Yeah.
To be open, to be in your hand. Banana's okay. But not compared to an ugly fruit orange.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that. Now, you know, a while ago, Trader Joe's or Asshole Foods or one of those people.
Yeah.
I've never been into one of those stores. But they put out peeled oranges in plastic containers.
I've seen that.
There was a whole controversy of people ridiculing them for that. Now, I'm someone who loves oranges and hates peeling them.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like breeding them, so they just go,
poof. Yeah.
You know,
That's how much God looks out for rich people.
Exactly.
Because the poor people ridicule them for having the pre-sliced oranges.
Right.
So I think the God plastic said, was the problem. I yeah. don't know if
the
it was.
Plastic is the problem. I have no doubt. I agree with this. What I'm saying is, I think one of the problems.
I actually missed that point entirely. I'm glad Mox pointed it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of us fooled Penn and Teller. One of us did.
Is the end of all of our conversations.
I love you, Matt.
I love you too, Mox.
One of the problems with being a vegan, besides mm-hmm. being vegan and being insufferable and everybody hates you yeah. for good reason, you know you're in the wrong.
Honestly, I put you, you're much more likable than people who have fooled Penn and Teller.
So, one of the problems is that vegan food is harder to eat.
Yeah.
Because you can pick up a hamburger.
Yeah.
You can pick up a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
But the vegan food is all kind of messy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this way of breeding vegetables.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if you had this little orange peel.
Yeah.
And you opened it up and there was a nice little broccoli salad.
Right. Just right there.
Just right there.
Right there in the.
It would be so, so nice.
I think.
So I just wanted, you know, let Sumo Oranges know
yeah.
that I appreciate them very, very much.
Yeah.
And also that they are certainly not a natural food.
Also that you weren't eating Sumo Oranges this week.
Well, yeah, but I've been thinking about this for a while. So you wanted to get to, I got a bunch of other stuff.
Oh, here. All right.
You wanted to get to some stuff, right, on Fool Us?
Oh, so yeah, there was a Fooler, Emily Robinson Hardy.
Yeah.
Emily Robinson Hardy. Basically, there's a trick in magic called ACAN,
mm-hmm.
A card at any number, A-C-A-A-N, any card at any number.
Mm-hmm.
And any magician who does this tells you what's important before they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this to make you, the layperson, care about this arbitrary trick.
Mm-hmm.
And I laugh because that's the only way I've ever seen it performed. And I believe, as someone who's newer to magic, the reason why is every card trick is ACAN. To the person
sure.
watching. If, yeah, you, sure. if you're not into magic, there's no difference between finding a card impossibly versus finding a card impossibly.
Right.
So
it's like mentalists
yeah.
who open their show
yeah.
by saying, okay, you wrote something on a piece of paper. You went to see Love last night. You had lunch at the Tropicana, and now you're here.
Yeah.
And then they do other tricks, and you go, yeah. Oh, you.
And then they beat you at tic-tac-toe.
What other trick is there going to be? Or I knew a magician who opened his show by saying, you know, name any card, and he reached his pocket and pulled it out.
Yeah.
You're done.
Good night.
Oh, you can control any card. We already know that. We're done.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make it different, but yes.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
So this person came on Fool Us.
Mm-hmm.
And they used a jumbo deck, mm-hmm. which to people at home means a larger deck of cards,
mm-hmm.
which to people at home means cool.
Yeah.
But means the magicians, they don't make a lot of gimmicked or fucked with jumbo decks.
And the ones they do are very obvious, like yeah. misspotted and stuff.
Right.
But you can't.
Do sleight of hand. You can't palm
them.
Yeah.
It's hard to hold a break. If you do hold the break, it's obvious.
Yeah. So there's all these things you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And this person just has the deck of jumbo cards sitting there, shows them shuffled, turns them over, puts a mic in one person's face, they name a card, puts a mic in another person's face, they name a number, counts it down, boom, nails it.
Yeah.
Okay, so when...
Well, they name a card, yeah. Someone else names a number,
yeah.
And the audience member names the number.
Yeah.
The audience member names the card.
Yeah.
Then the card is at that number.
Right there. No shuffling, no touching the deck. Right. Just an impossible coincidence.
Completely impossible.
Now, when Danny D'Ortiz was on Fool Us,
mm-hmm.
I got a lot of calls from friends
mm-hmm.
going, holy shit.
Yeah.
That's really good.
As I said, Lawrence O'Donnell Jr. wrote to me and said, what the fuck just happened?
Right.
One of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
The only calls I got on this one were from magicians. Mm-hmm. Magicians want to know what the fuck. And they want to know, basically, that there's a rule on Fool Us, and basically they said, did they loosen up the rules on Fool Us? Did they change the rules of Fool Us, and no one told us? Was basically the premise of each magician reaching out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, they did not. And those people were furious. But, And
they're furious because they don't know how it's done.
That's right.
The only way they can think to do it
yeah.
is a way that violates the basic rules of Fool Us.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And this is Emily who? This is what was?
Robinson Hardy.
Mm.
She's from England. And I believe it was on the latest episode.
Mm.
And I believe there's a gentleman who likes to mess with you guys from England.
Uh-huh.
And he often finds good actors, usually women actors.
Almost always young, attractive women.
Yeah. Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Strange
that a man in England likes young, attractive women?
Right.
Okay.
No, I don't want to put him in that corner. He does not come off that way.
No, he doesn't.
No. He's a very nice guy. And in fact, one of the people he worked with was the Van Harken twins,
mm-hmm. which we loved.
Which we loved, and they were, and so it's fun, because I believe if you taught this trick to a magician, they would perform in a way that would maybe help out other magicians, just haphazardly, just out of life experience, just the way magicians all learn how to talk tricks.
Right.
But there's something fascinating about teaching someone who typically doesn't perform impossible tricks that fuck mm-hmm. with magicians. They don't know that they're messing with magicians.
No.
They don't know that they're closing doors.
And they also don't telegraph.
Yeah. They're just doing the script that they learn.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating thing to have this.
Yeah. It's like getting an actor to win the Olympics.
Yeah.
How'd you do that in pole vaulting? I don't know. I just did what I was told.
The guy told me if I use his pole and I hop over there, then I would do the thing.
Yeah. But we've been working our whole life. We can't pole vault that high. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Guy trained me well, I guess. I do know the method, and I now know the method. It fooled us, but the method is brilliant.
Yeah, it did
it's
not.
Absolutely.
That's the thing. I want to bring it up on there because the next line was like, oh, then Penn must have been pissed.
Oh, Penn was thrilled. When I found out how it was done.
Yeah.
And the thing is, and by the way, you gave the information you need to figure out this trick in your description.
Oh, shoot.
Good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay.
Because no one caught it, but you did give it.
I was trying to be careful, but
I had the piece of information that I needed to figure this out.
Uh-huh.
I was so much closer to it than Teller.
Oh, okay.
Much closer.
Mm-hmm.
I was knocking on it and did not get it. It was a sincere, righteous fool, which, by the way, I'll add this again, they all are.
Right.
We don't, some of them don't feel they land as much. Some of them we feel like afterwards a little bit queasy about, but we don't ever lie about it.
Yes.
But sometimes it is a solid, righteous, oh my fucking God. And that's what this one was.
Yeah.
It was one that once you hear how it's done, you just go, that's a reaction, you know,
and it's in that same exact tone and voice.
Exactly, for me.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away by it, and it was just great. And I love the fact that magicians' cute little way of saying that's a great trick is you cheated.
Yeah.
That's their cute way of saying it.
It's so fascinating. I mean, I think because I'm always going to be the new guy in every conversation with magicians, you know, I've started so late that I don't feel the need to go like, well, I have this one. You know, I really just say I'm still the easiest guy to fool in the world all I would do is hand out trophies if I were hosting the show, that kind of stuff. But it is interesting the lengths the magicians go to tell you they're fooled by simply being outraged about technicality of the show.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not able to simply say, that was a great trick.
Yeah. Fool the shit out of me.
Yeah. That's a great trick. Fool the shit out of me. And that's the way, by the way, that's the way you could tell a really, really pro magician.
Yeah.
For instance, Johnny Thompson.
Yeah.
If there was a trick that fooled him.
Yeah.
Would say, that sure fooled me.
Close is always, in rehearsals, bold to be like, great. I have no clue how you did that.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Yeah.
Just so I know for the show how to we're going to play it.
Yeah.
But, and then of course does it always privately and all that stuff.
And Close also in our earpiece.
Yeah.
Is always really funny when he goes, don't feel bad. Fooled me. Fuck you, Close. Fuck you. And then he'll go, really? That's the other one he does. Really? You don't? Okay. I didn't expect. Huh? Good. Fuck you, Close. Fuck you. That's a really good, and you know the method, right?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So smart.
Yeah.
So crazy smart.
Yeah, yeah. And again,
by the way, not even an edge call follows the rules perfectly.
No, that's the thing. That's the reason why I know is because I've been following this guy, and he casts different people and keeps changing his tactics, and coming up with them with the performers, and it's a really fascinating. There are some people that are very driven by this show specifically, and he is one of them. So yes, I'm only aware of it because I've been following his trajectory and tactics across multiple seasons.
Yeah, well, there's Helen.
Yeah.
There's Hondro.
Yeah.
There's Paul Gertner.
Yes.
And this guy's behind the scenes, but he's the same vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how many times he fooled us.
Well, see, you have Rebecca Herrera, who won one for two on you. You got the Van Hargen twins. So that's a fooler. There's a girl's name I'm forgetting who you busted. She had the prediction on her soles of her feet.
Yeah. There must be three or four he's fooled us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of very You know, this year we're doing a different thing, and then we're doing a bit with Hondro.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which would be really fun.
I have a very interesting question.
I hope so.
I know. So I'm so sorry, but as your Gen Z child, I am very active on Reddit, which means that I'm very active in the r/foolus. They love me over there. So
who can blame them, Mox?
I have a very interesting question that someone asked on here. Do you believe that if someone invents this trick, say, because I'm using my own trick as an example, someone else invented my trick and I tweaked it to fool you? Do you think
there's one particular flash of the card that fooled us? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that the credit, quote unquote, of the fool goes to the person that made the trick or the performer?
It has to be both. It has to be both. The guy that we just had on at the show the other night.
Is there seriously people on Reddit who don't think it's both?
There's a lot of misogynists who do not like that. Typically, the people.
So you think the performer has nothing to do with it?
I know. There's a lot of misogynists on Reddit. Surprise.
Do you know how many magic books Reddit where they write tricks down that they never fucking did at all? They just said, I've done this and lied and just wrote a bunch of shit that someone should do to their body and jackets and pockets that they never even fucking did at all? Dickheads.
So I was just curious of your opinion, because I believe that credit is, you know, give credit where credit is due. The person who made the trick still matters, but if the performer does a shitty job, it can still be a shitty trick.
I mean, this is not, this is one of the cases where magic is not special.
Right.
When the birds do a version of Tambourine Man,
yeah,
you thought we're going to get through the whole show without a mention of Dylan, didn't you? The fact that Dylan wrote Tambourine Man is really, really important.
Yeah.
John Paul or George Martin?
Was that?
John Paul or George Martin.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if they give them a Grammy, do they go like, we can't. Only Dylan should get this Grammy. We should never.
Wait, now they put it that way.
I think you just want Dylan to get more Grammys.
The only way to judge a true meritocracy on the performance and invention of magic is to judge it through a game show on the CW. That's where we should spend all of our time. Exactly. Making sure that the Library of Congress covers the annals of history of Fool Us and the standards of Fool Us trophy procedures.
I think it's important everywhere. We just had a guy that was on the show, really, really nice guy, who came on and did a trick that was 100% invented by someone else, and then he just performed.
Yeah.
And he did a really nice job on it. Here's a real example of this. This is also true with your trick, Mox.
Thank you.
It was a trick that I knew.
Right.
And I had seen in the same form that he bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And he fooled me with it because he added a little wrinkle that was not part of the trick as it was designed.
Right.
But that fooled me.
Yeah.
And Teller and I both knew how to do most of Mox's trick, but Mox flashed something that we thought we weren't supposed to see, and we did see, and it sent us down the garden
path. Reel them in.
Mm-hmm. Again, someone on Reddit was very, very mad at me because they were like, well, right here you flashed. They should have known. I'm like, they should have. What are we missing here? I worked very close with
the
close.
The other thing is that it is. You kind of made this clear in your joke about judging everything from a game show.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. And if people are busting you on this on Reddit,
I don't care.
They're right. They're right about this to a certain extent, Mox. Teller and I were on full tilt.
Mm-hmm.
We were completely tilted.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But here's the thing that most typical watchers of Fool Us don't understand. I did not go on Fool Us for me. I went on Fool Us for you and you alone. And kind of Teller. I went on for you. It was not for me. I'm not building a career off of it. I did not intend to fool us.
I went on for me and am building a career off of it. just for laying cards on the table.
Well, okay, fine. You want this? I fooled you because Matt said I couldn't.
That's true. I was like, don't even worry about fooling him. You're not going to. And I tried to pep talk Mox into just performing it really well.
They do that a lot.
Mox punched me in the arms.
They do that a lot before the Olympics, like I said.
Yeah.
The swimming coach will say, you're not going to win the gold. I'll tell you that right now. Just go out there and just swim like it was leisurely.
And you're just happy doing it.
Just be happy to be in the pool. Just say to yourself,
how many people get to be wet?
Have fun. The water is perfectly chlorinated.
No,
it's the right temperature. Have yourself a nice swim. And if you happen to win, so be it.
In my defense, you were doing the thing that I've seen other magicians do, where they start getting lost in arguing different technicalities of what would and wouldn't fool.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And to shake them out of that, I try to.
Well, you did a good job because you went, you're here for your dad. And I was like, oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
But, you know,
but
Reddit
we were
is Reddit.
So we were so tilted.
Just, yeah.
I know.
Well, that's tilted. It. Like, and that's the thing. It's like you guys don't know who's going to be there. Mm-hmm. They come out. They don't even watch the package that people see on TV.
We don't see that.
And they just come out and do it once. And you guys watch it once.
I will say that I will take this to my grave. Mine is technically the longest fool on Fool Us.
That's
because
true.
It took 3 to 4, 5-ish months
that's
of
true.
Doing yeah. it. That's and true. Usually it's only about 1 month of working.
Yeah.
With the fooler.
Also, yeah, for the nitpicky people on Reddit, I did go watch Teller go up to close after Mox's performance, and Teller said, I knew the deck could work like this. And then close said something like, yeah, but, you know, what about the other way? Or there's more than one way you can use that. Mm-hmm. And Teller went, ah. Oh. Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then walked down the hallway fooled.
Yeah. And, you know, there are people. There was one person who we won't talk about and don't even answer me on this.
Yeah.
There was one person that did a trick so badly that we couldn't believe that's what they were trying to do.
I will not say anything.
And we considered ourselves fooled because
yes.
of that.
Yes.
That was a total, total egregious thing that was not right. But it happens once, and it happens in real time.
Yeah.
There was a time when Teller, on a fucking arm chopper, got himself tangled in knots trying to make it more complicated.
Right.
Sometimes Teller and I fool ourselves.
Right.
We just think it can't be this, it must be that.
Right.
And we get into doublethink and, you know.
And for Emily's trick in particular, for someone as knowledgeable as Teller, the amount of different versions of any card, any number, he must be recycling through his head. Mm-hmm. I mean, he must know 100 versions of that trick.
Sure. I know a few, too. Fuck you.
Sorry.
I was so fucking close.
Yeah.
Mike close.
And couldn't nail it.
Yeah.
And because you go through that zillion ways you could possibly do it, and this is a brand new way to do it.
Yeah.
And this uses a technique that no one else has ever used. The technique that's used has been used very, very, very rarely in Magic, but not for this trick.
Right.
And it just totally fucked our shit.
Yeah.
Took us down to Chinatown.
But here's the last thing I'll say. I liked the interesting question. I also don't give a fuck at what people think of me and my trick on Fool-less, on Reddit. I just liked the interesting question that this misogynist posed.
Why are you on Reddit then, reading about it?
Because they have funny cat videos.
Before I tell you my theory
on how Hondro did the Lego trick, but you have to watch his cat video first. And then I'll
not
tell
on r/Fool-less, but I should start posting
you,
cat videos.
Y'all watch
r
this cat
Fool-less.
Video and then I'll respond to you.
Yeah, you
let
want
me
the
know when you've
to
watched
how
it.
Hondro does it. Watch this cat video.
Boy, I'm excited. This year on Fool-less, we are doing a closer with Mac King.
Yes.
We're Woo-hoo. Doing two closers with Piff.
Yes.
We're doing a closer with Hondro, and we're doing a closer with Mox.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
They're all super fun. There's so many funny ideas. I can't wait for people to see this upcoming season. It's amazing. The more episodes they hand you guys, the more you guys just want to do cooler shit with your show. So it's
pretty
neat.
Well, you're missing. You think that our motivation for doing this is to get good tricks for Fool-less.
Yeah.
And that's just not the case. The motivation is that Handsome Jack is trying to write up all our tricks, and we want to write tricks faster than he can write them up. So it's all being done just to fuck up Handsome Jack.
There's only one person who was so sad that Fool-less got renewed, and it's Handsome Jack. He is not happy.
Handsome Jack actually came to Vegas. And in between the last time he came to Vegas, we'd put a trick in the show, got it perfected, and pulled it out. So we never got to see it. By the way, we put Stooges in.
Yes.
Woo-hoo!
And it's really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just love that we have a bit called Stooges.
Yeah.
And I just love the bit that I get to say Three Stooges.
So this one was not in spite of Handsome Jack. This was just because you wanted a trick called Stooges.
Well, that's not entirely untrue. I love my Stooges.
Do a quick shout out before we wrap up. I'm performing in New York City at the People's Improv Theater on Sunday, April 28th.
Is that a communist organization?
It is. Yeah, yeah. In fact, you just bring bread. You don't even have to pay for the ticket. You just bring bread. I'll be at the People's Improv Theater, 8:30, Sunday, April 28th. There are 11 tickets left.
How quiet.
Yeah. So I want to sell it out, just for an ego standpoint.
Yeah. How many seats are available?
70.
70.
Yeah.
So you've sold...
Let's go. Let's figure it out.
Sold 59?
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
What else you got coming up?
I'll be going to... there'll also be... David Corsero holds a Magic lineup show at the City Winery on Tuesday, April 30th. And I'll be in that as well. I'll be in Cincinnati on May 18th at Improv Cincinnati. Go there to get tickets there.
Now, what is it... Excuse me. What does it feel like for you to be playing an improv theater doing Magic?
Both places I'm doing that, right? In New York and in Cincinnati. I love it. I think it's actually like I did a show at the Lyric. I'm a very comedy-forward Magic show. And so actually what I feel like is my show really fits in the pocket there. I really like performing in comedy environments. I have a blast. It's super fun. because then the Magic really surprises people. They don't expect in those environments. They're not expecting the Magic to be good.
Are you doing the Battle of Dreams?
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow, it's amazing. I am now putting in my show.
Yeah.
A trick that you do, yeah. And you're teaching me.
That is weird.
Yeah,
that is weird. Although doing it in your theater presents a whole different angle of artistic angle. It is different. It was amazing how many different things popped up as soon as we started to think about putting it on its feet that we didn't think about. Of you doing it in the Penn and Teller Theater versus me doing it on the road.
We are now going to have three bits in the show that are done pre-show.
Yeah.
People have a lot of work to do when they come in. They have to.
Jesus fucking Christ.
They have to guess how many jelly beans are in the carafe.
Mm-hmm.
They have to sign an envelope on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to write down their dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Balloons.
All those things have to be done. No, they don't do the balloons beforehand. That's your work.
I know, but I need to mention it because I'm mad about it.
I think we was that Penn's masterclass, Penn's Sunday School, brought to you by masterclass. What that was? I think it was. You could go check out lifelong learning at masterclass.com/Penn, and then you'll get 15% off at masterclass.com/Penn. masterclass.com/Penn. And that was Penn Sunday School.
That was Penn Sunday School.
Cha cha cha. You become naked. It's good to have Mox here. We didn't use Mox much.
That's okay.
It was good to have her here.
I'll drive you home.
While watching Al Qaeda videos.
But at least I have Bluetooth headphones. The wire really bothers me.
You know we love you. Hey, Matt Donnelly, you got anybody to thank?
I do. I want to thank the following people who help this podcast keep it going along. Find people to support us at patreon.com/Penn. People like Josh Zero, Ben, Mike Hawk, Harry the Gorilla Gistian, Don Dottie, Kevin Burke, David McLaughlin, Old Bear Greg, Charlie Sheets says trans rights, No Shit Sherlock.
Hell yeah.
And Por Favor, Ven in Puerto Rico. Stephen Bricegirdle and his wife are working on a spatial video for Penn. Good luck. Coach Rat Bastard. Does a duck with a boner drag weeds? David, I'm going to finger your cunt Brenner. I don't know. I missed it. Tristan Connett, Mason Gooch, Sagebrush, Matthew Mishu, Luke Mellon, Jason Andrew Davidson, Peter B. Clark, Matt Williams, Soapy Fresh, Brad Sherleg, Steve Feldman, Jonathan P., NewRuleFX.com, Eric M. Ryan, Chris Tehachapi, Luke McKinney, Danny, insert meta joke here, Ruse, MDM. I don't like that Patreon has limited me to 50 characters. Adam Stickney. Adam Stickney, Nathan Julian, Jeremy in Shanghai, Chris Harris, Petty Officer Scoop. Danny, I want to put my symptoms in IMDb instead of WebMD, and I have a bad case of Gary Busey. It feels like that was more than 50 characters. William Wangreen, David K, Blue Drinks Film says, please tell the TCFE story again. Brandon Knapp.
All right, don't you call FedEx. I should do that.
All right, Brandon Knapp, Nick Dingman, Colin Durham, Susie Felber, Lancey Menchu, Harlem Leon Clark, and Michelle Yeiser. Thank you so much.
Thank you!
How's my driving? Dial 1-800-MEET-ALLAH.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.